Time to bring in Chip Towers from the AJC, AJC.com, Dog Nation. Chipper, good morning. How are you, my man?
Great, DJ. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thanks for taking a few minutes this morning. And it's been a while since we talked to you. I guess not that long. We hear you a lot, though, here on the ref when you're on the podcast there on Dog Nation Daily with Brandon Adams, and we always enjoy that. And good to chat with you again. Spring football doesn't take very long for the regular season to end, and all of a sudden – spring football's on us, and this is a big one for Kirby with some of the stuff that he's got to kind of take care of here over the next month.
I know. You know, you think about everybody, it seems like this time of year, you know, comes out with their five questions, right? You know,
yeah.
Five questions to get answered in spring practice. But when you look at Georgia's, it's interesting that they're kind of the favorite pick, you know, for SEC East right now. I can – see some of the reasoning for that, but when you get to that five questions, you know, the five things that need to be addressed, they're all pretty major. You know, the makeup of the offensive line, you know, do you have a backup quarterback? You know, can Jake Fromm do that? Wide receivers, you got to find somebody to replace Isaiah McKenzie. Kickers, punters, you got a couple of secondary spots. I guess to some degree that's the truth for everybody. I mean, that's the nature of college football. It's cyclical. People come in, people go out. But I don't know. They have a lot to address in this spring practice, and certainly a lot of it's going to carry on into preseason as well.
You know, and another thing, too, is, it starts with the offensive line, too, and that's certainly going to be a big part of spring practice. But the other one too, I think, is kind of interesting too, is the quarterback battle. And I know everyone's always focused on the quarterback, but I mean, it's just these two guys right now. And I'm not saying Fromm's expected to come in and start, but how much of a battle are you thinking that there's going to be between Eason and Fromm?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really intrigued with just Kirby's remarks on that. I mean, I think we've all heard him, and Kirby doesn't toss around praise real easy, and he's been pretty effusive when it comes to Jake Fromm on the way that he is supposedly led in the off-season workouts and the things he's done, things he's seen from him, and what I'm eager to find out is that just lip service? Is he giving that? Because obviously Jake Fromm's going to have to be ready to play just because of the depth situation. That kid's going to have to come in and expect to get some snaps. You're always just, one twisted ankle away from having to go into the ball game. Or has he been legitimately that good? Now, Jake Fromm has been one of the subjects that I did the Next Generation profile on DogNation.com, and he's an incredible young man. I mean, he really is. I do think this guy is special just from everything I've learned about him then, and then everything you hear about him and you read about him, you never know. So, is it just rhetoric, or is this dude the real deal? And if he is everything that we've been hearing, then I think it is going to be a real competition. I think that's exactly what the doctor ordered for Jacob Eason too. It seems like that Jake Fromm's kind of strong where he's weak, really, really strong on accuracy with the football, and really, really strong on kind of leadership skills, just kind of a natural-born leader. I think he'll help make Jacob stronger where he's weak. If he wins out, then he's good because he will have beaten out of a guy who started 12 games last year. So I think it's a good situation. The depth there, though, is really, really scary. You never want to go into a season with two quarterbacks, one of them a sophomore, one of them a freshman.
Talking with Chip Towers from the AJC, AJC.com, and Dog Nation.
Now, Chip, where do you think some of the biggest, I guess, attention will be paid throughout spring practice in terms of, position battles and things like that? Obviously, offensive line is something that is going to be key to fill some of those vacancies. But where are some other spots that you think are going to be some really, intense position battles outside of, offensive line and quarterback there as well, as we just talked about?
Well, I mean, it's tough to gloss over the O-line thing small. I mean, you think about it, guys. I mean, you lost three offensive linemen, that played a lot a lot of snaps, just about every snap at center in your two tackle positions. Those guys are gone, and the reality is, you know, we all know, I mean, they didn't perform particularly well as it is. So there's no guarantee, you know, there's a lot of school of thought there that those guys weren't that good anyway, so these guys are going to be better. But the problem with that is that, you know, the guys that were behind them could not beat them out to start with, which means that if you're going to if somebody's automatically going to be better, they're probably going to be new. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a huge amount of focus is going to be on the offensive line and figuring that out. And they're not – it's not, you know, nondescript positions. I mean, you know, this is your left tackle, your right tackle, and your center. And I mean, I think we're all we know that Lamont Galliard's probably going to slide in from the right guard down to center. But, you know, again, you got to have more options than that. And you hope maybe at the end of the day you get a better option than that. And then, you know, the general thought is that the JUCO tackle is going to come in from Gulf Coast, DeMarcus Hayes, and probably be that left tackle. Looking forward to the fall, everybody that I've talked to, and I did have a chance to go up to Brooklyn and meet Isaiah Wilson. You know, this guy, 6'7", 350, was recruited out of New York. With the idea that he could come in and start, and I would see him possibly being at that right tackle. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it, you know, some of these guys that are returning, guys like Kendall Baker and, you know, Sage Harden, different people that we've just completely forgotten about, those are the guys that Georgia really wants to see somebody come through at, because they're going to have a little bit more experience and not have to learn an entire playbook and, you know, come in and compete on the SEC level. I just think it's hard to gloss over the whole O-line situation.
Hey, Chip, when you went up to see Wilson, I mean, you feel like he's – I mean, Georgia got all these offensive linemen. I mean, he's coming in here. He's not like a – I mean, I know he's not a project. That's not what I mean, but he's coming in here. We're going to see him play in the fall, right? It's not going to be one of those where – like a Ben Cleveland or something like that, where everybody – I know you got asked about Ben Cleveland probably a thousand times a week, but that's not going to be the case with Wilson, is it?
No, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, a guy like that, I mean, to go up – it was fascinating for me. I'd never been to Brooklyn. I'd been to New York, to New York City, and then, you know, to Manhattan and all that kind
yeah.
of stuff. I'd never been to Brooklyn. And, you know, a guy of that ilk, you know, top two or three – offensive tackle in the United States of America, you know, he chooses you over Michigan and Alabama, you know, Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban, all those guys up there walking through the hallways of his high school. You don't do that if you don't expect that guy to play. And I know he's expecting to play. And he, you know, he's just a massive human being, you know, and Georgia's done that. I mean, you know, you think about this one. You got to give Kirby credit. I mean, he was the one that recognized when he first showed up on the scene, he was really concerned about Georgia's size on the O-line, particularly at the tackle position. He said, we need to bring some big men. And he, you know, cited all those demographic stats about how many people in the world are over 6'5". Well, you got that now. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, they signed DeAndre Dimery out of Brunswick, you know, 6'6", 312, and Isaiah Wynn is 6'7". 350 and DeMarcus Hayes is 6'6", 321. I mean, you know, they're definitely trying to change the size and stature of their guys on the O-line, and you're getting those guys in now. And Ben Cleveland, I mean, I probably get asked about him more on these podcasts and these Facebook Live and everything else.
Yeah.
Huge guy, another guy that fits in that category, but, you know, it's not automatic. It's a difficult position to come in and play immediately, but they're going to need some of these guys to do that, and I think Isaiah Wilson's one of them.
Talking with Chip Towers from the AJC, theajc.com, Dog Nation. Let's switch gears to basketball. Do you feel like, you know, now with South Carolina making the Sweet 16 and Tech is riding a little bit of a high here as they're advancing in the NIT, where would you put the state of the Georgia basketball program right now? And do you feel like there's things going on under the surface that, you know, with Coach Fox that might lead to a change or something like that?
Well, you know, I don't right now. And I tell you what, the postseason has a little bit recalibrated my whole attitude on that. Now, you know, I'll just say, I mean, I'm not a guy who fell on the side of, you know, Georgia hasn't lived up to expectation. You need to make a change right now. I mean, I do think things have to happen for Mark Fox pretty fast, like as in next season is probably as close to a NCAA tournament or bust scenario as I've seen in all my years. But that said, the postseason to me has told me that Georgia's very, very close. I mean, think about it. Eight of Georgia's losses were to teams that are in this Sweet 16 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two of those losses were to South Carolina, two of those losses were to Kentucky, and two of those losses were to Florida, and then Kansas as well. And all of those games were extremely close. I mean, Georgia played those teams. Now, nobody wants to hear that. Georgia fans don't want to hear that. Hey, we were close. I mean, they get to
right.
Hey, wait till next year. But, I mean, I think that's the fact. I think when you reassess Georgia's season, it could have been a lot different. I mean, they could be in that very scenario. Close losses don't count for anything. You've got to win those close games. That's certainly been the bugaboo for Mark Fox, and definitely here lately. Now, a couple of years ago, Georgia was winning a lot of those close games and made it to the NCAA tournament. This past year, for whatever reason, they couldn't win any of them, and that's the reason they're not there, and they're having to sit here and watch Georgia Tech and South Carolina do what they believe that they can do. So it's a bad scenario for Mark Fox, but he's coming back to Georgia, you know, unless some other program comes out there and flops him up. Sometimes these coaches stay a step ahead of the law if there's another opportunity somewhere, but I don't know of that at this moment.
Well, it's the power of agents, too. They can work all that stuff behind the scenes.
God,
yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Chip, there's kind of some unrest around the Georgia fan base right now, obviously with the struggles of the basketball team, and then all of the stuff about kind of the renovations going on at Sanford Stadium, and maybe just the way that the athletic department is spending money in general. What's kind of your take been on all of that?
Well, you know, I mean, I get it. You know, it's such a strange time we're in college athletics, you know. Supposedly these are nonprofit businesses, and then we've been doing some close examinations of Georgia's books and how Georgia operates. You know, and when you're sitting there with $77 million in reserve, yet you're beating the tom-tom pretty hard every day to have your donors step up, and they have. That's been the incredible thing. How much Georgia. The Georgia people, the Georgia fan base have stepped up, especially since Kirby Smart arrived on the scene. You know, they've been there with their wallets open and given money. But, you know, I hear some complaints of, a bit of a bait and switch. I mean, in other words, on the indoor athletic facility, what we were told was, it's going to cost, $30 to $31 million, $15 million of it we need to raise from donors. The other $15 million will come out of reserves. Well, Georgia ended up raising $36 million, during that campaign. And Georgia, the University of Georgia never came forth with their $15 million, so they just took that $36 million, paid for the whole thing, and taking the $6 million over and applying that to the new $63 million, recruiting lounge, recruiting building, and locker room that you're doing down there. So there's, some people have a problem with that and just kind of the overall management and Georgia kind of playing catch-up in facilities overall. But I think Georgia is – I mean, Georgia to me, David, I know you can agree with this. I mean, they're spending money like I've never seen them before, and I guess it's about time. I mean, Georgia was the very last to build an indoor athletic facility in the SEC. And as John Stinchcomb said in the article Seth Emerson wrote, Georgia shouldn't be the last to do anything. You know, Georgia should be a leader when it comes to facilities, and certainly the way that they are financially strong between that and the SEC, writing $40 million checks every year to the league, they need to be a little bit more aggressive in being competitive on that front too. Now, I'm used to – I came up in the days of where everybody shared the showers, and everybody had a metal locker, but it's not like that anymore. Now you got to outdo the other guy and Georgia just needs to get in there, roll up their sleeves in earnest, and compete on that level as well.
You know, it's funny, too, because when you hear about the fan experience, the concessions, the bathrooms, I mean, I always tell people, it's like, I hear you, but it's like I can't really throw out a comment on that. But it just – because, you know, we're sitting in a different part of the stadium and that kind of thing during the games, and I know you're in the same boat, but it's like when you have enough people kind of create an uproar about that, you kind of feel like, okay, that is something that probably has to be looked at and, you know, potentially taken care of. The problem with college football stadiums, though, is – especially one like Sanford Stadium, it's not like you're going to knock it down and build a brand-new stadium over in Atlanta. So it's not always the easiest thing to take care of, but I do get it. I mean, the fan experience, especially like you say, they're being asked to give a lot of money. That's something that definitely needs to be taken care of also.
Well, and I mean, we saw that. I mean, you know, Greg McGarrity reacted really quickly to the outroar about the bathrooms. The uproar about that, but, you know, especially with that that was the first reaction you got from the majority of fans when they learned that they're going to be doing a $63 million renovation of the locker room. Say, hey, what about the bathrooms? Now, I get that, but on the other end of it, you can also see from the standpoint of University of Georgia, you're only talking about six Saturdays a year, you know, six. So it's not like it's something that you know has to be done. And Sanford Stadium is also, you know, very unique. You got to remember, this place was built in 1929. You know, it was the first game, I think 27, when they first started building that thing. And so there's not any room to grow the concourse unless you blow up some buildings on the south side. And then you got to, you know, then you have a cemetery on the other side. So it's very difficult to do a lot of improvements on the outside of it. So it kind of is what it is, and that's okay. I mean, I think Sanford Stadium is one of the most unique and beautiful. I've been to all of them. And really, Georgia has a very unique situation with that, you know, stadium being right in the middle of the campus the way it is and opened into the campus. And that's very, very unusual. But it comes with some, you know, logistical problems. They're being addressed. You know, they're going to spend $1 million right away, you know, before the start of the 2017 season to get. I've never read so much about bathrooms, but apparently they're going to get what they need. I don't know, more seats, better tile. You know, I mean, it's coming.
Well, we were talking about pecans earlier. Now we're talking about bathrooms. So I guess that's a good way to finish this thing up, Chip. Always good to talk to you, my man. And we will catch up with you again this spring. And again, like I said, it's hard to believe the Tech game feels like it was just yesterday, and that was a rough one. And now here we are getting ready for spring practice, so get our minds on something else.
A lot to be excited about. You know, Notre Dame in week two, App State is a great opener, and Georgia has a lot to get done between now and then, so that starts today. We're looking forward to that.
Thanks, Chip. Great talking to you. We'll catch you again soon.